Hi, this is Cornelius Fichtner. I am the host of the Project Management Prepcast. If you hear this message, then you are listening to the free Prepcast. This version of the program is not updated regularly, and it only contains a few episodes so that you can listen in and hear what the Premium Prepcast offers. The Premium Prepcast is for paying subscribers only. It is updated about twice a week, and we look at the concepts, tools, and techniques that you need to know in order to sit for the PMP exam. To learn more and to subscribe to the Premium Prepcast, please visit our website at www.pmprepcast.com. And now, on with the show.
Welcome to the Project Management Prepcast, helping you to prepare to take the PMP exam with your host, Cornelius Fichtner.
Hello and welcome to the Project Management Prepcast, your one-stop audio shop for the PMP exam. I am your host, Cornelius Fichtner. Today's episode is an interview with Renata Weir and Mercedes McShane. Renata is a student of our PM Prepcast and Mercedes is her PMP study buddy. They both passed their PMP exam and I met with them to discuss their experience because there is of course no better way to learn about the PMP exam than to hear firsthand from a freshly certified PMP what it is all about. And even better if you get to hear two opinions at the same time. As you know, the rules of the PMP exam are such that we are not allowed to discuss specific questions from the exam, but we can discuss Renata and Mercedes' experience in general thoughts on the process, as well as their recommendations to you. All right, here we go. Hello, everyone. Today we are in Renata Weir's house out here in Torrance to talk about the PMP certification. Hello, Renata.
Hi, Cornelius. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. And thanks very much for allowing us to come here today.
My pleasure.
With us also is Mercedes McShane. Hi, Mercedes.
Hi, Cornelius.
And Mercedes and Renata were study buddies on the way to their PMP exam, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So first of all, of course, congratulations to both of you for having passed the PMP exam. Always a great milestone. So Mercedes, when did you pass it?
This past June in 2008.
And I believe the same for you, right?
June 6th.
So you're brand new, freshly minted PMPs.
Wahoo!
So let's start at the very beginning. Why, Renata, did you decide to become a PMP? What was the reasoning behind it?
The reasoning behind it was I was told that and I truly believe that one needs to have the PMP to get past the HR, and also it increased my knowledge of the project management practices as I currently work in a PMO. Mm-hmm. So it was a matter of the recognition by the rest of the world that I had achieved something that very few other people had.
It wasn't a requirement from the PMO that you take it.
It was highly recommended.
Highly recommended. Oh, did they support you in any way, like time off or financially or any help there?
Yeah, they actually gave us time during the day to study, but I had just started this new job, so there wasn't a lot of spare time. And I also had other commitments, volunteer commitments that I was working on, trying to work on that as well. So we studied at lunch and be able to work together. And then, yes, they did pay for the test.
Okay.
The cost of the test.
That always helps, yes.
Yes. And I did get the day off to take the exam. So it was bonus.
Yeah.
It was really good.
And in your case, Mercedes?
I decided on my own to pursue it. It had been suggested to me from someone at a CIO level, and it's become a general expectation for a lot of companies when you're thinking about career changes and staying within the project management environment. A lot of companies now have that as a general expectation.
Mm-hmm. So do you expect that the PMP will then help you to further your career?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Where exactly do you think it'll help you? Like Renata said, just getting the foot in the door, or do you see other areas as well?
I think that a lot of hiring managers are expressing it as a requirement to HR through their HR departments now. So I think it's one of the things that's scanned for within HR departments before resumes are passed on.
Mm. So that's one thing that many people say today. It's like, if you are a project manager, you have to have the PMP exam. Is that what you see, or...?
I think it depends on what industry you're mm-hmm. in. Definitely, if you're talking about oil and gas, engineering and construction, and peripheral types of industry associated with that, it's a requirement. For other companies, it's more of an expectation.
Mm-hmm. All right. And let's see. Let's go back to the day when you decided you want to do this. When was that? So you passed the exam, both of you passed the exam in June. And Renata, when did you decide?
I decided in September of 2007.
Okay.
That I was going to get my PMP. But I started a study class mm-hmm. with the local chapter, PMI chapter. And then I was in a volunteer position, so I got pulled away into some other things. And then I picked up the next class in the spring, which is where I met Mercedes, and we decided to study together.
Okay.
And I also listened to your podcast.
Yes.
While I was driving back and forth, because I had a 2-hour commute one way, and I thought, well, I'm not going to waste my time and not be able to study. So I listened to your podcast mm-hmm. and got an idea of the general consensus. So it was just I was pulled in many directions and I was sliced in many directions that I didn't get the time to focus on it.
So if I understood you correctly, then from September to spring, you were kind of only half-heartedly into it. You kind of almost dropped it again. And then starting spring, when you took the in-person class, that's when you really started going for it. So that's what, about 5 months then of real in-depth study? Or 4 months, rather. You did it at the beginning of June, right?
We started when?
February.
Yeah, okay.
Our classes started in February.
Yeah.
And we decided that we were going to commit and get this done in March.
Right.
And we made 100% commitment.
And you got it done in?
June,
right.
Yeah, June.
Yeah.
So I just dropped everything and focused entirely on studying for the exam.
Okay. And for you, Mercedes, was it the same? Was it also February was the start, or did you do something before?
I had purchased some Rita Mulcahy materials at the last North America Global Conference. Mm-hmm. Her materials were just highly regarded. Whoever I talked to, over 50% of the people unanimously recommended her materials. And I had purchased the materials at that conference. There was a significant cost reduction to do that. And I started going through the materials, and some of the things like earned value I hadn't done for years, and was looking for a way to work with other folks to kind of just jar my memory of a lot of things that I hadn't used for a long time. And don't really know exactly how I found the PMIOC prep classes, but saw that one was going to start in February. So I went ahead and signed mm-hmm. up for that.
Right. So you had the Rita Mulcahy book. Was it just her standard?
It was the kit. Right.
So the kit comes with the book and a CD, I believe.
The book, the CD of practice tests, mm-hmm. and the flashcard, flashcard
yes.
booklet.
Did you buy any other materials on top of that?
A friend of mine had lent me a book, and I don't know if the gentleman pronounces his name Crow or Crow, mm-hmm. C-R-O-W-E. And he had a spiral book that was extremely beneficial with the inputs, outputs, and the tools and techniques. It had pictorials for each of the topical areas. And between that and the outer core materials provided mm-hmm. by the PMP prep exam,
yes.
plus the Rita Mulcahy materials, I think that combination right. of materials was very beneficial yeah. for me.
That's something that I always recommend to people as well. Don't just buy one book. Buy at least two. Once you go beyond three, it's probably overkill. But you want to get the same kind of information from various sources so that you get not just one angle or one opinion. You want to get two angles, two opinions, so that you can really see where these concepts are coming from and how they fit together. So you got the best of it all because you had Rita Mulgay's kit. You had the Andy Crow, I believe his name
That's
is, right?
The yeah. Yes.
And then you also had the Outer Core book and the presentation, the class presentations from the PMIOC. So you really had three extremely high-quality products that you were working with. Okay.
I felt they were. They were well yeah. worth the money. It was nominal money.
Yes. In the end, yes, it is nominal money, rather than having to pay, again, $285 or something along those lines, dollars, to retake the test if you fail the first time.
Right.
Yeah.
As well as I had taken in 2006, when I first moved here mm-hmm. from Canada, I had taken a UCI certificate in project management
yes.
online, and that was just a phenomenal program as well. And I found myself going back to some of those materials that had turned around as a reference and be able to go through them, particularly for earned value in Quentin Fleming's material in his course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well, and make sure that you had it, you know, that you
yeah,
had it
right. That's a good point, Renata. One of the things that the classroom environment I found very beneficial because there's no one thing that you can buy that's going to cover everything that you need to know for the exam. It's a wealth of background of knowledge that the organization, the PMI organization, is looking to test you on, or at least that's my perception of it.
And
it's looking for people who it's going to weed out people who don't really have a general knowledge background. You can't go to a class or read a book and go take the exam. It's not a traditional
nope.
test situation.
Mm-hmm.
It very much, as you're told by every PMP prep instructor that you have, it's testing your knowledge and your skills of your career. It's not testing your ability to memorize a book and be able to regurgitate the information in that particular book. That's not the type of exam it is.
Mm-hmm. Now that you've gone through it, do you agree with that assessment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think a lot of struggle that I observed with myself and with others in the class was coming to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
That there is no one book that you can pick up and read. It really is testing whether you have an adequate background and experience as a project manager. If you don't, you are not going to be able to pass that test. And it has nothing to do with the materials. It has to do with what your skill set is.
Since both of you took the PMI Orange County prep workshop, that means, Renata, you also had the outer core materials at your disposal. What other materials did you have that you studied from?
I used the Rita Mulcahy materials.
Mm-hmm.
I had the benefit of the UCI project management certificate.
Right.
I used Andy Crow's book,
okay,
which I got from the PMI Inland Empire through my contacts there and learned about that material there. And then I also used the flashcards and your podcast.
Right.
I found just incredibly useful because you turn around and you emphasize the inputs, outputs, and tools and techniques. And then it was George Meyer when he came to do the review and he said, you're going to have to memorize the inputs and outputs for each one of the knowledge areas and be able to draw those diagrams. And when I was, long time ago, I used to teach CPR and first aid. And I could teach anywhere from medical professionals right down to people with developmental disabilities and serious learning disabilities. And they had to be certified. So I know from my past experience that people learn in four different ways: kinesthetic, auditory, visual, and tactile. So I knew I had to figure out what my learning style was and how to keep myself on track. So I knew that I needed to listen, but there was only so much that I could listen to. Then I knew that I had to, writing for me and visualizing was very important because there's a connection there for my learning. And then the tactile was just being able to work in that commitment with Mercedes and knowing that I had to go to her house or she was coming here and mm-hmm. we were going to go through the exams. And I remember in university, a friend of mine now who's very successful turned around and he told me, he said, you know, having a study buddy is one of the best things you can have because what you understand, the other person potentially doesn't. And if you can explain it to them, then you know for sure that you understand it. And that became exceptionally critical when writing that exam because this exam for the PMP certification is an exam in critical thinking. That's my opinion, mm-hmm. is that it is really important to know the concept of how the information comes in, the inputs, the tools and techniques, which one are you using, and know exactly where you are in the PMBOK and the body of knowledge, and then be able to say, okay, well, this is the output. And being able to conceptualize and critically think where you are and what should be happening. And actually, I find that that's a very useful skill when I'm turning around and doing my job and being able to ask, because now I'm much more focused on things like the earned value and the risk because of my knowledge and my experience in over 20 years in the IT industry. I turn around and I'm thinking, all right, well, what's the risk? You know, when I was working as a creating a data center. So for instance, the project that I'm doing right now is an enterprise data warehouse and we have to install a new partition for a disk. Well, okay. So do we have all these risk factors that are identified? And I find myself, it's amazing. I find myself going back to the PMBOK and going, well, this is where we are and this is what we need to know. And this is what we're assessing. And this is what the expected results are. Right. Mm-hmm. So I as much as I started this journey with, I need to get this credential to be able to get past the HR department because it's an expectation, I'm finding that it really is a very practical skill to know and be able to perform your job effectively and efficiently.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the two of you and the fact that you were study buddies and you studied together. So you didn't know each other before this, right?
No.
No.
Okay, so you met at the PMIOC PMP prep workshop then. Mm-hmm. Was it suggested by the instructors that you form study buddies or
all
did
of
you
the
just...
instructors, all of the instructors highly recommended okay. every single one of them.
Yeah. And so one of the two of you just, did you happen to sit next to each other and you just looked at each other and say, you want to do this? Or how did it happen?
Actually, Renata came over and introduced herself to me
okay.
and kind of suggested it. And
well, she said that she had oil and gas experience. And I went, oh, somebody that knows oil and gas. I feel like I'm at home.
Yeah, we were talking about the contingency and management reserves.
Yeah, and you said, oh, well, if you don't know this, you don't survive in the patch. And I went, oh, well, absolutely. I can relate. So I mean, that was the thing. It's a past experience because you worked for Unical.
Right.
And I've worked in Canada for Apache and TransCanada Pipelines and in Canada and a number of different
okay.
oil and gas companies. So,
all right. So how did you set it up? What was your study routine like? Where did you meet? Maybe Mercedes.
I believe we first started meeting right at the facility where we were having the class because mm-hmm. we were there anyway. And then after the class was over, we continued there for a while. And then because it was a weekend, it was easy to do that. But then we wanted to ramp it up and start meeting on some weeknights as mm-hmm. well. So Renata has a car, a hybrid that allows her to use the carpool lane. So she would come up to my place after work because she could get there very quickly.
Yes, and we have to mention here in Southern California, yeah. there's a huge amount of traffic on the road. So this is important information for everyone here in Orange County area, yes.
So the deal was she would come to my place, we'd cook her dinner, and then we'd have a study session after dinner.
Mm-hmm. And how did you work out the study sessions? Did you just start with Chapter 2 of the PMBOK guide, or what did you do?
We took it and broke it apart by first the knowledge areas, by the 9 knowledge areas, mm-hmm. and then we made a plan, and we just scheduled it like we would any kind of project. And we turned around and we said, all right, for this knowledge area, we're going to study X, Y, Z. These are the resources and these are the materials that we're going to use to fill that. And then we got comfortable with that. And then we used to go through those questions with Rita Mulcahy, right? And we go, oh, this is just one of those ones. Throw up your hands. We had no idea how to explain the answers. It's like, where's that one coming from? And we're like, fine, that's just a, you know, that one's a lost cause. And then we knew that we were ready to write the exam. When we could go through the knowledge areas, and then we start going through the initiation and the planning. So we had a schedule. So we went, I went two nights to her house during the week, and then she came on a Saturday to my house, and we turned around and we made up a plan, and we said, all right, we're going to write this by, when did we say first? May? May was the plan.
I had always intended to do mine like late May, early June.
Right.
Right. You were trying to get it done, but then you had some work commitments that made you have to change your schedule.
Yeah, I get it. And I was just split too thin,
yes,
going in too many different directions. And that's why the length of the time is, you get pulled off in so many different directions. So I just turned around and I said, everything else has to stop. Everything has to stop. And this is the timeline. And you kind of looked at me and you went, come on, you got to be kidding me, right? And I said, nope, we got to get this done because I want to go back to living my life and having fun and doing the things that I like to do. So it's like anything, you know, you need to make that commitment to yourself and be able to say, this is what I need to do.
Yeah, you definitely have to walk away from your private life. It's just like going to school.
Oh.
So you have your regular job and then you have your night job. We considered it another job.
Yes, yes.
And you have to be committed to it. There's a huge amount of material that you have to review to refresh your memory.
So if I understand you correctly, you met 3 times per week for 2 months, 3 months?
Well, from when the prep class ended.
Which is about April, right?
I think. So we would take time off for things like the Easter holiday or any previous commitments that either one of us couldn't get out to. We would get out of, we would work around that. But
So that if I see this bright, the timeline then in my head, your PMP in-person classroom class started in February. It's a 6-week class, 6 times... is it 8 times?
No, I think actually it's 6. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
It went 8 weeks because you have to observe the...
Oh, yes, there are
the
holidays in...
holidays.
Yes, right. So it's 6 Saturdays spread out over 8 weeks. And every Saturday it's an eight-hour class. Do you think there were more?
Yeah, we can look it.
Well,
up.
But it
was
is an
a
effort.
Holiday
yeah, it is.
Well.
It is a lot of effort there, right. with that class
right,
alone.
Right, because that's an all day class.
Yeah, and then after that, you met 3 times per week at your homes for another approximately 2 months.
About yeah,
right.
That's about right.
So there's a lot of investment that you do from a time point of view, and I assume. When you didn't meet, you were also studying,
you were
right?
Studying.
You came home in the evening and you opened up a book and
right.
you still
well, whenever
continued.
You could fit it in during the day.
Right.
Right. And that you have to commit to do it. And that's kind of, we were each other's motivator. Because it's real easy to chuck it all and say, forget it. But when you're working with someone else, there's more of an expectation to complete your assignments and be ready.
Renata, you're probably the prime example of this because you started out on your own in about September. And then in February, or a little after February, you got together with Mercedes and then you really pulled through. If you think back and if you had someone in September already, would that have changed the picture? Would you have been done sooner? Or no, it was just the being pulled in too many directions at that time.
Yeah, there were too many other things that were happening. And not being able to shut those things off. Because this has been a goal of mine for 3 or 4 years. Want to turn it, knowing that I have to get this certification and being able to get it and knowing the kind of recognition that you get. It doesn't matter. When I left Canada in 2004 and started flying back and forth from Canada to Los Angeles, and working and then going back and working virtually, there was no request for any kind of PMP credential. Whereas now, if I look on the job boards for positions in the oil and gas industry, it doesn't matter if you're an engineer or whatever, that PMP credential will garner you a much larger salary because you know that there's a financial and there's a fiduciary award associated with having that credential and having that knowledge and being able to say, I know what I'm doing. And the same is, being able to understand the differences between the traditional project management out of the PMBOK and then being able to understand Agile because that's more of a scientific project management methodology, and then being able to look at different pieces. And I mean, there's people like Lois Zells who tell you that she finds that when she does her expert witnesses and her testimony, and when she does her research, that Agile doesn't work as well. But I mean, there's other factors that come into play to that. And now I can turn around and be able to debate those issues and discuss them in detail and be able to say, okay, well, this is the difference and these are the reasons why. So I don't regret that effort and that energy, and being able to set a direction and understand that, communication is the biggest cause of project failure. Also, coming across in my research and my other volunteer positions, having a heightened awareness of the fact that now Wall Street is starting to tie project management practices into the stock price based on the PMO and their effectiveness. Listening to Marty Wartenberg yesterday talk at the Advanced Topics Seminar about how biotech companies are starting to implement PMOs and the practices and be able to say, all right, there's a tie between the effectiveness of the project and the project management office and the best practices. So this, if everything in life is a bell curve and it has the two ends and then you have the huge mm-hmm. curve in the center, then I would say that we're on the upswing. We're on the beginning of the curve at the very bottom. I don't even think we're past the first, I don't even think we're into the third or fourth standard. We're not even into the fourth standard deviation. We're just barely coming up that curve. So I think this is an excellent time for people to turn around and make that commitment and study. I mean, there's lots of people out there that are project managers, but the first thing they tell you in these courses is that majority of projects fail because of the project management practices.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about billions of dollars every year that are lost because we didn't get the scope right, or because we didn't turn around and agree, or because the negotiation skills aren't there to be able to get people to turn around. And I'm going to quote Marty Wartenberg when he said yesterday, most project managers are, you need to take a hard line, and it's not a non-risk occupation. You have to expect it. If you're going to stand the line and say, all right, this is the project schedule, and if you want to change your scope and you need to reschedule it, then you're going to have to re-baseline the project, and this is what you're going to have to give up. Especially in today's economic climate where you're cutting back on resources, that's something that I'm very acutely aware of where I work, is, having to cut back.
Mm-hmm. Your opinion differs from what I hear other people in our local chapter say. Many of them, they simply say, oh, the PMP exam nowadays is really just, a glorified high school exam. You just need to have it, but it doesn't really help in day-to-day. However, when I listen to you, you're really pushing the fact that, no, this is really helpful. This has helped me as a project manager to understand better what I'm doing, how things fit together, and how projects actually benefit the bottom line. Now, let's talk to Mercedes about this and see how you feel about this. Where do you see the PMP exam fit? Is it more a glorified high school diploma, or is it really something that helps a PM project manager?
I think that depends on what company you work for mm-hmm. and what industry you're in. And perhaps the majority of people that are giving you this feedback don't really work at a company or in an industry where there's any value attached to the PMP.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the correct answer is it depends. Yeah.
I can tell you for a fact, you can go look at job postings at oil and gas or engineering and construction type industries, and related to that, definitely they
Oh, yes. PMP required is the standard these days in any project management offering that you have out there. Mm. PMBOK guide. You mentioned, Renata, you mentioned a little earlier that now you're able to actually argue with people because you understand what the theory is all about. How many times did you read the PMBOK guide in your preparation for the exam?
You're not going to like the answer to this question.
Oh, I do, because everyone studies differently. Everyone learns differently.
I had a hard time going through it once.
Okay.
I really did. But
so 0.8, 0.7?
0.6.
Okay.
I'm a visual learner.
Yes.
And I got lost in the words.
Yeah.
And the context.
It is dry. It is very dry. Yes.
And that's what people used to tell me. Oh, read it 3 times. And I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You're also shaking your head, Mercedes.
Well, for those who, adults learn by pictorial, that anyone who is going to give a training class that has been taught how to teach adults is taught that adults learn through pictures. And the Andy Crow spiral notebook that has for each knowledge area, the inputs, outputs, tools, and techniques. That was a phenomenal tool to help learn the inputs, outputs, and tools and techniques. And I think if the PMBOK could incorporate some type of a visual tool like that, I think it would be a lot easier for people to actually use the PMBOK guide itself. Mm-hmm. A lot of people at the classes were sharing massive Excel spreadsheets, all color coded.
Yes, oh, yes, yeah. I've seen those.
And so that is a way that some of the folks in the past have dealt with that. I tried to do that, but you have to blow up the print so big to see it that you end up spending more time trying to make it big enough to see than you do actually reviewing it. Mm-hmm. Someone shared with me the Andy Crow materials, and I can't say enough about that, particularly for the inputs, outputs, tools, and techniques.
Yeah. The benefit of those Excel sheets is for the person who actually creates them. So if you start out with an empty Excel sheet and you say, I'm going to create a visual for me that shows the input, tools, and techniques and outputs, then you have to think yourself into this. You have to create it. You have to draw it. You have to do it. And the process of doing that, that's what teaches you.
Right.
Just picking it up from somewhere and starting to look at it and learning it, you might as well just look into the PMBOK guide and read through it. You get the same benefit.
Right.
But taking the PMBOK guide information and turning it into a new medium, now that's where the benefit comes in from a learning perspective and knowing all these inputs, tools, techniques, and outputs.
I liken this to studying for anatomy or physiology class,
mm-hmm.
medical students or EMTs, or I worked for the fire department for a while, so I got to know different people in different professions, and you have to learn the physiology of certain bones or muscles, and you learn these mnemonics, and that's what I found Andy Crow's material to give us that, because for me, being a visual learner, that just ramped me right up that curve geometrically so that I started to get that information. And if I thought of something, even on the exam, I was sitting there and I'm going, okay, we're here. And I go in my head and go off to this picture of where this input, tools, and technique was. And I had these little mnemonics.
Just very clever, easy pictures.
Yeah.
To remember each of the different knowledge areas, mm-hmm. and their inputs, mm-hmm. outputs, tools, and techniques. It was very cleverly presented.
Yeah. What I did is I have this way of mnemonically remembering things. So my parents, they have a humongous house. And what I did is every process in the PMBOK guide, that was the 2000 version of the PMBOK guide, every process of that guide I was able to assign to a room in my parents' house. It's really huge, the house, so that was good. And I was walking through these individual rooms, and every, you know, the sofa had inputs, tools and techniques assigned to it. The lamp had something assigned to it. So I when I need to know, well, what's the input, the tools, techniques and outputs of this process, all I had to do in my mind, walk into my parents' home, walk into the appropriate room and look at the furniture that's standing around in my mind, and I immediately knew, oh yes, there's the sofa, that means we have these inputs, the over there is the lamp, and there's the all the items, the picture on the wall, I just assigned these things to them. It was very easy for me to remember that. And again, just the process of doing that in my head was one way of remembering these. Nowadays, I would probably say you don't have to know them by heart the way I did. I think it's more important to understand the concepts behind them. You know, why do you need these inputs for that particular process? And if you understand that, then you also will soon realize, of course, and that's why we have these tools here. And by applying these tools to the inputs, well, of course, it's clear you have to have the following outputs that come out of this. Let's move on from the ITTOs over to sample questions. You mentioned, Mercedes, that you had the CD from Rita Mulcahy with the questions, and the Outer Core book, I believe, also comes with questions. Correct. How many sample questions did you answer in your quest to become a PMP?
Oh, gosh, thousands.
for the last month, that's all we did.
We switched from, we reviewed all of the materials, and then the next part of that was just continuously going over practice exams.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And did you just use the ones that you had in your materials, or did you also go online and go to the free websites and use those?
I only used those two.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually ran out of time.
You ran out of time? You couldn't do them all?
I couldn't. I was going to go to the free website to get a different sense of what the questions were. From your podcast, you had a number, and on your website, you have a number of free exams that you can go to. And I ran out of time to do any more exams. And I went, you know what? I've got Rita's material, and I think I was getting like 90. Yeah, we said we would write when we were getting 90. So, 80. The class tells you 80, and then it got to the point that we knew it was 90. And even then, I mean, it took 3 hours and 51 minutes for me to write that exam. Mm. And when I went out to take a break, a biological break, the ladies in the test room kept on telling me, oh my God, that's one of the hardest tests. We see so many people come in here and just very hard. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've written a lot of math exams. And they're not easy because mathematicians think in esoteric terms. They're way out there. And I'm going, wow. You know, this is one of the hardest.
It's very
tests.
Comprehensive.
Okay. So, well, let's take a look at the exam day itself then. So, you had applied to take the PMP exam. You got the letter, or emailed rather, from the PMI that says, yes, you can take it. You went to the Prometric website. You got yourself a date through the Prometric website. You scheduled it. Okay, now what? Did you go to the exam site beforehand, so you know where it was, or did you just show up the day that that you had to take your exam?
I went to the exam site the night before,
okay,
exactly as you recommended in your podcast, and I found that very useful because I wasn't familiar with that part of town, and I ended up driving around, and it was in a rather peculiar place, so that was highly recommended. And I mean, I mapped out everything. I knew where I was going to park. I got there an hour early, and I just chilled out, you know, and listened to some classical music and got my alpha waves moving in my head and made sure I had my coffee. And even then, they said, well, you know, you're supposed to be a few minutes early. Oh, I still ended up being fine anyway. So, you know, it was all good. But still, that exam is so comprehensive and such an exercise in critical thinking that I think that if you were late or you didn't know or you got befuddled, and I'm not a person that's easily rattled, that would have been really, mm-hmm. that would have really been the tipping point. So I think that's an excellent piece of advice.
Yeah. What about you, Mercedes? Did you just go there on the day?
I went in advance as well.
Okay.
I didn't actually park the car and go up into the building, but I drove to the building and saw where I was supposed to park.
Did you take it in the same location by any chance, or did you take it in the separate locations?
I think separate, because mine was over in Anaheim, and I think yours was in Gardena.
Yeah, I was in Gardena.
Okay, okay. So you get there, you walk into the door. What happens next? What happened to you?
Well, you're one of many different types of folks that are showing up for professional exams. So you stand in line and you hear the folks up at the counter saying, have your ID ready. And so when you get up there, you're kind of ready for them to check your name off a list. Now, if your name's on their list, you get sent over to another computer station. They pull you up and read the specific rules that they have to comply with for the type of test that you're taking. They pull out paperwork that you have to sign.
Mm-hmm.
I guess before that, you have a little locker area. You are not allowed to take anything in there. For the PMP class, you're not even allowed to take a calculator. You'll see other folks going in with calculators for professional engineer and architecture tests and whatnot, but
do they provide a calculator to you?
No, you have to use the calculator that's on the computer itself.
Okay, so it's a Windows-based computer, I assume,
yes.
And it has a built-in calculator
yes.
that you can
For
use.
For PMP okay. classes,
yes.
they are required to have you just use
that one.
Calculator.
Okay, okay.
And it has less functionality than the little calculator that I got for like $6 at the grocery store. So it's very basic math. You know, we were talking about the critical thinking part of it. You also have to refresh your basic math and
Absolutely.
Algebraic skills from
yes.
high school algebra, because you will have to utilize some of those skills.
Oh, yeah.
What about pen and paper? Did they provide that to you?
You get a little exam booklet that's probably got like 6 or 8 sheets of paper, and you get mm-hmm. 2 pencils. And if you need more paper, you have to turn in that booklet to get another one.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have – you have plenty of scrap paper.
Right. Was it the same for you, Renata?
Yeah,
you got a booklet?
There was a booklet, and if I ran out of paper, there was lots more.
Interesting, because I got 1 pencil and 3 yellow sheets of paper when I took it a little while back. So
–
It really probably depends on the place where you go.
I would be surprised to hear that, because ProMetric should be the same.
Yeah.
Should
I think it was you wrote your exam in 2000.
Yeah, so I mean, it's 4 years different.
It could
so they
be
may
enough
have,
that they got enough
yeah.
feedback of complaints.
Yeah.
That, there was more than enough paper.
Okay. So they guide you in, right? They sit you down in front of the computer. What now? What happens next, Renata?
Then they load up the system, and they put the computer
your
loads
test.
Up the, your test,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then you run through a series of exam. It's a tutorial.
There's a tutorial mm-hmm. that you can optionally take that gets you familiar with where all the places on the screen that you have to know as you go through the exam, and how to mark the one that you would mark mm-hmm. to come back and revisit, or the next button, and they practice you through the little calculator.
Oh, they do that
yes.
too?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a mark for review, and then what was the other one? There was mark for review and then something else. There were 2 different categories.
I can't remember the other one. There were 3 buttons on the bottom. Mark for review, next, and I forget the third
previous?
One.
Previous?
No, it wasn't previous. It was something about reviewing.
Ah, yes. Isn't there an overview page where you see all the questions, and it shows you which ones you marked for review?
Right, but she's talking about a third button on there, and I just don't remember it.
And I remember when I went through it, there were questions. It's typical test-taking strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Do the ones that you know you can get right, mark the other ones for review, and then there was another category, which the name escapes me right now, and you turn around and be able to follow through that. So when I went through and I did the easy questions that I knew I was going to get, and then there were the ones that were much more challenging, and then there's the ones that's just like, okay, you know, you really need to sit and ponder your navel about these particular questions, because there was a lot of navel gazing on that test.
And all of our materials prepared us for those as well.
Right.
They did too.
Right. Okay.
For the expectation that you would actually get those type of questions on the exam.
That's true. I mean, that's the good thing about the PMP preparation class, is that if we hadn't have taken that class, number one, we would have never met the Head Study Buddies. Number two, we would have never known the complexity of the questions and the preparation. And I mean, if you have people who come and they teach these courses and they teach the source material, and you have your primary instructor and then your secondary instructor, and each chapter in the greater Los Angeles area, it seems to me, does exactly the same thing. And you have people that turn around and tell you, well, you know, you need to know your inputs, your outputs, your tools and techniques, but also accept the fact that there are questions which are just out of left field. And then there are those questions which are test sample questions, and they're testing those questions to see how
viable
they are.
25 of those, yes.
Right. And it's a matter of going through those, and it's like, well, I can definitely see that this one, assuming that it's a test question or a sample question, this one just doesn't cut it, you know? It's just too esoteric.
Okay. Did you have a plan for breaks throughout the 4 hours that you were there? Or did you just, you know, oh, I now need 5 minute break and got up and or how did you plan for that?
You recommended the plan for that, but to be honest with you, for me, my time went so fast. I did take a bio break at one point, midway through, and you don't get a clock, you don't get a traditional clock, and I didn't wear a watch, so I was keeping an eye on my countdown from the 4 hour mark. So I quickly wrote down for every 50 questions about where I should be so that I could kind of just keep an eye on my progress.
Yes.
But I've time went by really fast.
So if I translate this correctly, this means that on the computer screen there is a countdown clock that starts at 4 hours and it counts down.
It says you go through your little practice and then it immediately launches you into the exam, and you're at your 4 hour mark, and then it counts to zero, down to zero from that.
Okay.
And then my experience was exactly the same. You can take a biological break, you can take a mental health break, you can take a pause break. They're very happy with giving you time to walk out of the room. They make sure that, you know, you sign out and you sign back in, and they mark the time so that you know how much time you were actually gone. And you just turn around and take the time that you need. So it was very accommodating that way.
Okay. No.
I really didn't find it stressful.
Oh, really?
No. It was really an unstressful situation. Because again, it's critical thinking and remembering your basic algebra equations from high school.
Yeah.
But no, I was not. It was it was very quiet, and was not rattled or anything.
Yeah, I heard all kinds of things. I mean, I've heard of people who said that their computer crashed while they were taking it. Another person had somebody sit next to her who was using a very strong perfume and a lot of it, which was extremely distracting. And in my case, there was construction going on downstairs.
Oh, that's
so for the complete 4 hours, you had hammers going off constantly and drills.
That would have definitely changed my answer.
Yes.
Oh, my test room was full. It was hot.
Oh, yeah, and there are constantly people coming and going as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you have to tune that out.
They gave me a set of headphones.
Yes.
Okay.
And everyone has a set of headphones at each computer station.
Right.
And they were not Bose. They did not cancel all the noise, but they came pretty close.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So in your case, it was hot. It was stuffy, Renata, you said.
Yes.
And Mercedes?
I kind of vaguely would notice it would get warm, and then the AC would kick in and it would get cool.
Okay. So it really depends on where you take your exam. You have to be prepared for hot and stuffy, or you have to be prepared, as in my case, for there's construction going on. Or in the case of Mercedes, it's a normal room without really all too many problems.
Right. I don't know. Maybe I lucked out. It was it wasn't a brand new building or anything, but it was in a very quiet office area. And maybe the difference is I went on a Saturday morning. It just so happened that Friday was completely booked out when I went for a slot, and I didn't want to go into the following week. And there they had Saturday classes, and there was a Saturday morning or Saturday appointments, and Saturday morning was open, so I took the Saturday morning appointment. It could be that was the difference. Whereas Renata went on a regular work day.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a Monday, and it was very busy. And I also took a sweater to make sure if I got cold or the air conditioning was going too crazy. And there was a lady beside me who was rather animated, but you just learn. When you work in cubicle farms, you learn to block that stuff out.
Yes, absolutely. So dress in layers is the recommended action, right?
Right.
In this area, yeah. Renata already told us it was 3 hours and 52, you said, right? 51?
52.
51. How long did it take you, Mercedes?
I think I stayed for like 3 hours and 50 minutes.
Okay.
And there was a bio break in there.
Okay.
Yeah, because they tell you don't just leave when you're done, to use the time to review things, just to feel comfortable for it, at least as the mark for review, to give yourself a chance to review things, and don't leave anything unmarked. There is a button to look for unmarked items, and they do recommend that you look for and make sure you mark something for every question, even if you have no idea what the answer is.
Yeah. If you don't know what it is, select the one.
Select an answer.
And move on, right? Because if you answer it wrong, it doesn't count against you.
Correct.
But if you don't answer it at all, you have no chance.
You have no chance.
At least if you guess, you have a, you know, A, B, C, D, 25% chance of getting one answer correct.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So it's 3 hours and 50 minutes into your exam, and you're sitting there and you're ready to say, I'm done. Where do you click? What do you have to do in order to say, I'm finished? Is there a button that says end?
Somewhere. You don't just end out. I mean, you cannot accidentally exit from that exam.
Okay, that's good.
You cannot accidentally goof that. They give you every opportunity to stop and go back.
Right.
But at some point, I forget what it is, but there's a button that you click, and then it walks you through an exit procedure.
Mm-hmm. And does it tell you right there and then, yes, you've passed, or
it's
no,
immediate.
You haven't?
Immediate.
It's immediate.
But it does take about a minute.
Oh, yes.
It
takes about a minute or two,
okay.
but it's rather quick.
Okay, so it has slowed down, because it only took about 10, 15 seconds when I took the exam. You clicked the I'm done button, and 10, 15 seconds later, it was like, bing, you passed.
It was about a minute or two, and then there was some final.
But they tell you that. It tells you, don't
panic.
Don't panic. It says something to the effect of, don't panic. Right. It's going to take a little while to calculate this.
And they did ask you some quality exams, like what was the...
Yes.
It was something to
there's
do with quality exams.
There's a follow-up survey,
sort of.
There's
an exit procedure survey that you go through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then you turn around, and that was the longest 2 minutes of my life.
That's
really
what everyone
was.
Says, yes.
I remember in my leadership course through PMI Orange County, you turn around and one lady talked about one of her exercises, and she said, the longest 2 minutes of my life was waiting for the you passed.
Well, and you both did. Wonderful. So, and then you get up, you walk outside, you check out, and I believe they also give you a printed exam result document, right?
Correct.
And it has the stamp, and then there's certified seals, so it's very officious.
Wonderful.
But from that point forward, and then what I did was after I got after I got comfortable with the fact that that aspect of my life of studying was over, and now I had my life back, which was a surreal experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I getting my bachelor's degree was, I thought, going to be the ultimate moment in educational experience, but I really have to say that passing that exam, I really feel like I accomplished something, because it really was a challenge. And I got on the phone with a number of different people, and I remember one person saying, now you're one of 255,000 people in the world. And I went, wow.
Yeah, that's not that many.
No, considering it's a world of billions. Yeah. But still, the fact that project managers, you know, we're not that big of a bunch. Or I don't even know, Cornelius, how many project managers are there?
Well, my wife is a project manager, but she doesn't get the salary nor the title of the project manager. So I would say for everyone who is named project manager, there are probably 5 to 10 out there who are not named project manager, because they simply do it, and it's part of their day-to-day job, but they don't get the recognition of actually being a PM.
That's a good point that you bring up. Cornelia. So, and the nice thing about the PMI organization and the PMP exam is you don't have to be a named project manager. There are other roles as in R-O-L-E, that will qualify you for the ability to take that exam and have that credential. And that's kind of a nice thing about the PMP, is you don't actually have to be a name. You don't have to have that title to be able to pursue that certification.
Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that the PMP credential brings is the fact that you understand the day-to-day operations and the best practices, but you also start to think strategically and how you tie into a corporation's strategic plan and their long-range planning. I think is something that that's when I talked about, oh, well, now I'm able to think and rationalize the different pieces. What makes it different is that now I start to think more strategically as opposed to operationally. I mean, project management, every person's job or every manager's job, is a lot of it is operations, firefighting, from the moment you go in the door until the moment you go home. Whereas I think a little bit with project management, as much as it's a temporary, unique endeavor, you also tie that into, especially where I work, you tie that into the big long-term strategic picture in terms of where the organization is going and how you're going to go forward. And especially because I work for an organization that is relatively new, who's going through a lot of growing pains. And what I do see is a fair amount of structure that's going into that and tying into the long-range strategic planning with the CIO that's currently there. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by, to clarify my previous comment.
Okay. Well, let's see. You have studied for the PMP exam, you've taken the PMP exam, and you've got it. Well, what would you have done differently now, looking back with the experience? Anything you would have studied differently, any other focuses you would have placed? In hindsight, what would you have done differently? Mercedes?
I don't think I would have done anything differently.
Okay.
When Renata and I studied together, we did take the time to draw out the network diagrams and work through the math problems. And that was all very beneficial at the end of the day.
And for me, what I would do differently is endeavor to put more focus. It almost seems like it dragged. The process of getting the PMP dragged on too long, and that's because I allowed myself to be split in too many different directions. And I think now the lessons learned for me for studying for this credential is, because my next credential is going to be the Six Sigma Black Belt,
yes,
is turn around and focus on that. So I've already set a plan, and I'm starting to work towards it, and a progression, and be able to go and focus on that, not in the same level of not at the same level of intensity, I think, that what I did for the PMP exam. But I've looked up the American Society of Quality, the credential. I found out that there's exam prep classes that are held, and turn around and I'm thinking, okay, well, if I go to that class, I'll find myself a study buddy.
It sounds like you're going to be a professional test taker almost.
Well, no, I mean, one thing I've learned over the years is that the more credentials and initials that you have behind your name, the easier it makes it to be recognized for jobs and being able to make a contribution to the bottom line. Yeah.
Now, you're originally from Canada, yes, and we're right now here in California. It translates, obviously, back to Canada. What kind of a benefit will the PMP exam be to you should you decide to return to Canada?
Buku bucks.
Really?
Yes.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. Especially because I have experience in the oil and gas industry. And there's a, with oil at $146 a barrel trading on Friday. Mm-hmm. And knowing that there's a lot of oil in the ground, there's a lot of natural gas in the ground. Technology does not exist to refine or bring that oil or gas, natural gas, out of the ground. There's that the prices are not going to get any cheaper, or they will come down and they will adjust a little bit, but not a heck of a lot. And for someone who's able, these are multi-billion dollar projects. And if you have a methodology to be able to carry these projects forward, and as the thing that brought Mercedes and I together is that experience of the oil and gas industry and the earn value and the other margins and being able to manage projects that way, that's the piece. When you're talking about billions of dollars at $143 a barrel, I mean, the reason I came here is because in 2004, oil was $19 a barrel. And that was in 2004. So in 4 years, it's changed. And I have all these friends up there that are reservoir engineers, and they say, there's all kinds of oil down there, but the price has to go up to be able to get it out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So
to make it worthwhile.
Make it worthwhile, financially. Yes.
Right. Yeah. And you look at the Gulf of Mexico is now a potential exploration ground. There's been a big, huge find in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Both of my sons are working in Fort McMurray, the oil sands capital of North America, making, again, buku bucks. You know, with that kind of experience, it translates into money because right. You're given a great deal of responsibility to be able to bring something out. And you know that there's also... As I mentioned, there's oil and gas companies that are now running their PMOs and being recognized by Wall Street, as there's a direct correlation between the efficiency of the PMO and the stock price and being able to produce.
Right.
So I think that if I was to do that, you know, but there's oil and gas companies here in the States, and there's in Los Angeles, there's a lot of refineries. And, of course, going to alternative energy sources, I think, is the next big push, because a friend of mine went to the Gartner conference and they turned around and they said, you know, the oil and gas companies are now starting to diversify their portfolio and start to look at alternative energy sources like wind, solar, when the efficiency of the solar panels becomes more cost effective. Right now, there's a professor in the University of, a physicist in the University of Delft in Holland, who's come up with a new design for solar panels, and once he can get that into mass production, then I think you'll see the effectiveness of solar panels become much more cost effective. I was just reading the internet the other day, and of course, as we mentioned previously, I have this hybrid car with carpool stickers, and I can drive as a single person in a carpool lane. Well, in Japan, they have the Japanese are. The engineers, the auto manufacturers are starting to look at putting solar panels on the top of the car as a thin layer, not to power the car, but to turn around and power the air conditioning. So, I mean, these are all the baby steps, and these are all areas that, you know, the project management, I think, will come in very handy.
Mm-hmm.
And having that credential and being able to look at process improvement, continuous improvement, project management, and, you know, being able to tie that directly to the stock price.
And that's just one industry. That's not everything that's out there.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's the thing that brought me to California, was there's not only my husband, but many other things is turn around and there's the biopharma industry. There's the biopharma
high-tech
industry.
Yeah.
High tech. Then there's, you know, the mortgage, real estate. The greater Los Angeles area has every industry known to mankind. But I mean, of course, now... What brought me here was $19 a barrel, and I remember someone in Calgary telling me, "Don't leave, because the prices are going to go up."
Well, yeah, it is a limited supply only. Yeah,
right.
Mercedes, from your point of view, what will the PMP exam, the PMP certification, do for your career?
Talk to me in a year, and I'll let you know.
But definitely a beneficial thing for you.
I believe so.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. Okay, well, thank you very much, both of you. Mercedes, thank you very much for
being
on the program. Renata, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure.
And this was our interview with Renata Weir and Mercedes McShane and how they became PMPs. I would like to leave you today with a quick look at the PMBOK guide, in particular at the fourth edition of the PMBOK guide. Today's episode was recorded in July of 2008. This means that if you are preparing for the PMP exam around this time, then you will be using and studying the PMBOK Guide 3rd edition. And you may have heard that the 4th edition PMBOK Guide is on its way. Consequently, you will probably be wondering, am I going to have to take the exam based on this new upcoming PMBOK Guide 4th edition? And will I have to read the new 4th edition PMBOK Guide as well? The answer is a simple no. The new PMBOK Guide 4th edition will probably be released in December of 2008 at the latest. At that time, the PMI will then also publish a schedule that explains when the PMP exam will change. My expectations is that this changeover will happen sometime in the third quarter of 2009, so around July, August, or September of 2009. That means if you are planning to take your exam before then, you will study based on the PMBOK Guide 3rd edition, and your exam will also be on the PMBOK Guide 3rd edition. If, however, you take the exam after that, then yes, you will study based on the PMBOK Guide 4th edition, and your exam will also be based on the 4th edition PMBOK Guide. And that's it for today. Thank you very much for being with us. Until next time.